Now, amongst the various forms of Buddhism with which we're currently becoming acquainted in the West is Tibetan Buddhism. Hmm? Now, first of all, what can we learn? What is it that we can learn from Tibetan Buddhism which we cannot learn from any other form of Buddhism? In other words, in what respects is Tibetan Buddhism unique? Now, first of all, Tibetan Buddhism represents Indian Buddhism at the height of its development. I think I've gone into this before, that in India, Buddhism passed through these three great stages of development, the Hinayana, the Mahayana, the Vajrayana, and at the end of 1500 years, Indian Buddhism was a very rich and a very many-sided thing. It wasn't just one yana or the other, it was Hinayana plus Mahayana plus Vajrayana. And it's this unified, this triyana sort of Buddhism, which went from India to Tibet and was preserved there. So we may say that Tibetan Buddhism is the nearest that we can get to Indian Buddhism as a living tradition. It's all very well to read about traditions in books, all very well to read about ancient traditions in books, but you want some sort of contact, even indirect contact, with living traditions. So Tibetan Buddhism, which is still a living tradition, albeit on a reduced scale, is the nearest that we can get to Indian Buddhism as a living tradition, not just that, but to Indian Buddhism at the height of its development. And this is perhaps very, very important. Dr. Konza has in this connection a rather interesting theory. Dr. Konza maintains, amongst various other things that Dr. Konza maintains with great vigour and learning, Dr. Konza maintains that the nearer one is to the geographical centre of a religion, the nearer one is to its spirit. And conversely, the further away you are from the geographical centre of a religion, the further you are away from its spirit. And according to Dr. Konza, some forms of Japanese Buddhism, of course we tread here on very delicate ground, some forms of Japanese Buddhism, and I think he has the Nichiren school in mind, are about as far away as you can get from the spirit of Buddhism, Indian Buddhism. And he also points out that even Ceylon is pretty far. It's near India, yes, but not Buddhist India. It's 2,000 miles away from North India, from Buddhist India. But Dr. Konza says Tibet geographically is nearer to India, is nearer to the original geographical centre of Buddhism than any other form of Buddhism. And according to his theory, it's therefore nearest to the spirit of Indian Buddhism. Now, whatever the merits may be of Dr. Konza's theory, I think we can say that it seems to be borne out by the example, by the instance of Tibetan Buddhism. The spirit of Tibetan Buddhism seems remarkably close to, if not identical with, the spirit of Indian Buddhism during the last stages, indeed at the height of its development in northeastern India. Tibetan Buddhism has a further advantage that from Tibetan Buddhism we can learn about all three yanas. And we don't learn about them as it were side by side and unrelated. We learn about the three yanas in the context of Tibetan Buddhism, that is the Hinayana, Mahayana and Vajrayana, as successive stages of a single path. This idea that the three yanas, the Hinayana, the Mahayana and the Vajrayana, constitute successive stages of a single path. This idea is mentioned, first of all, in the Hay Vajra Tantra. And it's worked out in greater detail by Atisha, who of course paid a visit to Tibet, in his Bodhipatha Pradipika, which means light of the way to enlightenment, or lamp of the way to enlightenment. And this same idea, this same doctrine, is the basis of Tsongkhapa's Lam Rin, or great stages of the path. In fact, we can say that in certain respects, this idea of the three yanas Hinayana, Mahayana and Vajrayana, constituting not just three different forms of Buddhism, but three successive stages on the path to enlightenment, this idea constitutes the leading idea of Tibetan Buddhism. It's common to all the schools, whether it's the Nyingma Pas or the Kagyu Pas, the Sakya Pas or the Gelugpas, they all believe that one progresses to enlightenment through a course of training, in the course of which one recapitulates the Hinayana, the Mahayana and the Vajrayana. Now, this sort of combination, this sort of synthesis of all three yanas is not found elsewhere in the Buddhist world. If you go to Southeast Asia, if you go to Ceylon, or if you go to Burma or Thailand, you find only the Theravada, which is one form of the Hinayana. You don't find the Mahayana, and you certainly don't find the Vajrayana. If you go to China and to Japan, you find the Hinayana, yes. You find the Mahayana, yes. Here and there you find the Outer Tantra, but though you find them, in China and in Japan, these different forms of Buddhism, even these yanas, are usually constituted into mutually exclusive, sometimes even rival, schools. In China, for instance, the school of the Vinaya, the discipline, which is the Hinayana school, is a separate school by itself. And the different Mahayana schools are separate schools by themselves. And in Japan, this is even more the case. Japanese Buddhism is more sectarian than any other form of Buddhism. And by sectarian, I mean that all the different schools are sects in the Western sense. They're mutually exclusive in organization and even sometimes in doctrine. And there has been in the past a certain amount of rivalry between them. But the inner tantra is found only in Tibet. And it's only in Tibet that you find all these different schools, all these great yanas, Hinayana, Mahayana and Vajrayana, existing not independently, not separately, not as separate sects, but as stages of the one path leading to enlightenment. So this is a very great and remarkable feature of Tibetan Buddhism.